Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, April 6th, 2026. I'm Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Cassidy Palmer, and special guest David Welch. We're welcoming David back as he was on with us 2 weeks ago to talk about our Major League Hoosiers. This week, he's going to talk to us about our Minor League Hoosiers. David, what do you got?
Hey, all, thanks for having me back. Yeah, the Major League Hoosiers are off to a decent start with Schwarber, Herron, and Hart. And the Minor League Hoosiers got themselves going about a little over a week ago with a Triple-A. Tanner Gordon, we talked about a little bit as a shock as not being part of the Rockies rotation. Has had two appearances so far this season. In 11 innings pitched, he's only allowed one earned run. And with 11 strikeouts in both his WHIP and ERA below one for Triple-A Albuquerque. Jack Perkins, another sort of shock that he wasn't part of Oakland's pitching staff, has made three appearances for the Las Vegas Aviators. And his first start was a little bit bumpy, giving up three earned runs. But his next two outings, he's only allowed one earned run with seven strikeouts. Also in the Triple-A level, Matt Lloyd. He's played in three games, a little bit sparingly, but it's had three hits, three walks, an RBI, and is hitting 300 on the season. And then also rounding out the Hoosiers at the Triple-A level is Philip Glasser, who's racked up four hits with two stolen bases so far. At the Double-A level, Nick Mitchell is off to a decent start. In the two games he's had, he's tallied a double as well as a home run on set in Saturday's game. And scored two runs for the Akron Rubber Ducks. Gabe Bierman, back in Double A with the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. He has one outing, pitched two and two-thirds inning. Did not allow a earned run and struck out three. And Elijah Dunham, after tearing his Achilles last year, he did come back at the end of the season in independent ball. And I think he played a bit in the Caribbean over the winter. He's on the Rocket City Trash Pandas roster. In the high level, it's one of our higher drafted players as of late, Devin Taylor. He had a hit in his first at bat for High A the Lansing Lugnuts, who are playing in Fort Wayne this week, I believe, starting off tomorrow. Ben Grable earned a save against Chris Feeney's Mets organizational High A team there in the Brooklyn Cyclones. Grable earned the save while striking out two. And also at the high level, Carter Matheson is with the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. And then rounding out the affiliated no class affiliated Hoosiers or the affiliated minor leaguer teams is Corbin Dickerson, who's probably off of the hottest start of any of the Hoosier minor leaguers. He's had four hits in three games. He's batting .364. Hit his first professional home run, which was an inside the parker. He also had a double as well. Wrapping it up, some of the players who are still rehabbing or waiting for the Florida Complex League to start. Bradley Bremer is still working on rehabbing his elbow from last season. Luke Senard is dealing with an abdominal strain, but probably should start the season either in High A Rome or Double A Columbus once he's healthy. Connor Foley is still rehabbing his shoulder from last season, and Brock Tibbetts dealt with some lower leg injuries last season and is on the IL for Dunedin Blue Jays. And then waiting for the Florida Complex League to start. Cole Gillies, who did appear for the Clearwater Threshers of the Low A Florida Coast League last year, a little bit surprised he was started the season in the complex. Will Eldridge with the Braves, and one of our favorites, Ty Bothwell with the Nationals.
All right. Well, now we'll go into our week of our current Hoosier team. It was kind of a roller coaster of a week, very up and down. So we'll start on Tuesday. Going into the trip to Evansville, Indiana was on a 5-game losing streak, and it felt most of the day like they were going to climb out of it, but they did not. And after 11 innings, they went from being up 4-1 and lost the game 5-4 on the road. They came back home for a Big Ten series against the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers, and kind of most of the things that we had been seeing with the team completely turned around on Friday night in an absolute dominant 11-0 performance. And it turned into a series, in fact, when the Hoosier rotation got back to being what we really had seen and known, which was a good, solid starting outing in all three games. The Hoosiers were not able to hold on despite another big lead on Saturday, as the in the late innings, Rutgers bats kind of figured out first Rivera and then Siebold and then Mostalski. But it's one of the things. Hey, teams the teams get good with their bats every now and then. Indiana finally on Sunday, in the Sunday Reds, made it happen and had another dominant performance. Took a full game this time, but a good dominant 8-2 win. So there was a lot of good to see throughout the weekend. As I said, I didn't actually feel all that bad about Saturday. I think sometimes you just got to look at what another team does. I didn't put it out because it was so late, but coach was pretty frustrated with the team. And it may have just been more of the long-term frustrations, I think, were coming out when he had that conversation. Because to me, a lot of the outs late in that Saturday game were hard hit, and it was a lot of good hard contact that just was finding gloves. And every now and then, a guy's gonna lose a slight tick on his pitch, and a team's gonna be able to hit him. It's gonna happen every now and then. Not everybody is gonna be lights out every single time out. So that was what we saw overall. Now I'll turn it over to Cass. Was there something statistical that stood out to you this week?
Yeah, thanks, Carl, and it segues nicely with what you were just talking about. After that, the Evansville game on Tuesday and the loss on Saturday, I wanted to dig into a little bit some of these blown late leads. And I went through all of the games and I looked at two different scenarios. The first being IU had the lead going into the seventh, or they took the lead in the seventh or later. Obviously, there are more of that first category than there are that second category. In fact, there are only four total games where IU did not already have the lead. Took the lead seventh inning or later. Three of those resulted in losses. The third North Carolina game, the game against LSU, the second Western Kentucky was the lone win of the scenario, and then Indiana State, not this past week. But that means three out of the four games where IU took the lead in the seventh or later ended up not being wins. That's not something we want to see, and that's part of, I think, where the frustration is coming in, both from coaches' perspective, I'm sure from the players' perspective, and from our perspective as fans. Looking at it, almost a third of the games where IU was leading going into the seventh inning, into the back third of the game, almost a third of them ended up in losses. And total, out of all of the losses, more than a third, almost 40%, were fell into one or the other of those blown late leads categories. And on its own, a blown lead is not worst thing ever. But when they start stacking up in a rough season and wins in those scenarios could have resulted in a win at UNC, a win against LSU, a win against Notre Dame, a win against Oregon, sweeping Rutgers in what could be a tight Big Ten race down the stretch trying to get into the Big Ten tourney. All of those start stacking up as the season goes on. If those were the only losses, I don't think anyone would be too super concerned. Those happen. Particularly in the instances of the leading going into the seventh, because usually that taking the lead in the seventh or later, those are still tight games at that point. Going into the seventh with a lead seems like 4 runs is about the sweet spot. If IU is up by 4 runs, it tends to go well. If they are up by fewer than 4 runs, it turns into a bit of a crapshoot. There are some against Vandy, they were up 3 and got the win out of it. First Minnesota game, they were up 2, got the win out of it. So there are exceptions to the rule, but largely those wins have come in significantly bigger leads than those losses. Just very much stood out that 2 of them in the week. I get the frustration, but I think it's on its own, it's not the biggest thing in the scheme of we're at 19 losses on the year. I do understand the frustration, and the stats show that that's not super great at this point in the season. But Chris, we've always got some silver linings. Who got your red belts this week?
Well, again, last week we're talking about no wins. So this week we're talking about two. I'll take it. Could it have been more? Sure, but there could have been less too. I mean, we sat here, it had been 6 in a row losses. So starting to get back on track. I'll take a baby steps if we got to do that. That's fine with me. Offensively, we talked about last week, we wanted some power. We said we haven't hit home runs anymore. So this young man decided to hit a home run in 3 games in a row. I gave it to Jake Hanley for our offensive Alex Dickerson Award. Now it's again another week where there were people that maybe on another week could have won it. We had two guys that were a triple away from the cycle. Somebody had 4 hits, somebody had 4 RBIs, but we sat here and said we wanted bombs, and he hit 3-1. He hit a home run to make it 2-0 in the first on Tuesday. He hit a home run in the third on Friday to make it 2-0. And I know he hit the one in the ninth. Us Met fans like to call that an A-Rod homer because he used to hit a lot of those, if you know what I'm saying. So yeah, he might have got his A-Rod homer, but still, that was 3 games in a row bombs. Jake Hanley gets our Alex Dickerson Award. Oh, and here his name comes up again for defensive back-to-back. Jake Hanley, second inning, one out. He goes to the rail. I wouldn't even call that a rail. That's a fence. The bullpen fence gives up his body and makes the catch. It was a 2-1 game at the time. He sacrificed himself. And if you pause it at this, what can I say, the sweet spot? If you pause it at the sweet spot back on the big plus, all you see is his legs. It's pretty wild. You don't see his chest. It's just 2 legs and completely up. And it was pretty wild. It was a great catch. Great catch. Reminded me of Ike Davis at Citi Field. He made a couple of those. But Jake's is much harder because he doesn't have Ike Davis did it a couple of times into the Mets dugout. But then you got all the Mets holding him up and hey, oh, protect him. Hanley didn't have that. There was nobody there. The ump didn't even try to help him up for a while. He just stared at him, which I thought was weird. Like, put your hand out, help the man. So Jake goes 2 for 2, gets the Tony Butler. For our pitching award, I mean, Carl mentioned it, really, really solid starting pitching this week, and we needed it. But one guy was a lot better than solid. One guy threw 6 innings and no one got to second base. One guy threw 6 innings and gave up no runs. One guy threw just 86 pitches and 8 strikeouts. Tony Newbeck, the only thing that stopped him was our offense, because I know he wouldn't have come out of that game. He was cruising, but we run rule him. So we were up by so much. They put in, who'd they put in? Jake. So now I'm stuttering now.
Vogel, Jacob Vogel.
Oh, yeah, they put in Jake. I joked Jake Hanley on my mind so much. I almost said Jake Hanley pitched. The guy can do it all. He might have got all three. I don't know. No, Jake Vogel came in. He
Can
wouldn't get three.
Hanley can pitch. He just
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't at
listen,
IU, so
you never know. He might have to. So, yeah, they put in Vogel. Jake Vogel came in to mop that one up in that last inning. I think he got a couple of Ks, too, if I remember. But, yeah, literally, he struck out a guy. The ball got away. He throws a double play ball, right? Somebody got on first, we throw him out at second. Literally, never a guy on second base in 6 innings. It was great work by Tony. I think he's going to settle in nicely back into the Friday night. We've got a lot of Big Ten games that are important coming up. We talked about that last week. I think starting off with Newbeck on Fridays is the way to go. And so he gets the Joey Donato Award. So we have Hanley, and Newbeck, the law firm for this week.
Now I will say that Hanley was robbed of getting his fourth home run in a row.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yes,
In the next game, in the fourth inning.
I was behind right field when that happened. So I was got the very clear view. I saw the guy's glove was over the fence when he caught the ball. So it was complete home run robbery on Sunday.
So he would
So
have had all four in a row. I did
he would
not
have had
know
all four, yeah, if it wasn't for that robbery catch, yeah.
that. Joe Adell got him. Did you see what that guy did? Joe Adell at the Angels robbed three home runs in one game. It was insane.
Wow.
But, Hanley got. He would have had four. That's amazing. This is another reason for him to win it.
Yep. All right. Well, I'll go quickly through the Big Ten. Boy, I'll say this. I haven't actually pulled it up. We were not this good at picking the league last year. We just weren't. I mean, I think, Bowen and Drew, this is their first year doing this. But I think Bowen's like better than Zach was last year. He's 3 behind, 4 behind me, but I'm in first right now at 26-6. But Bowen's at a strong 22-9. I know I was sub 500 this time last year. We were not doing this well as a group, but we seem to have it this year. Now, part of it is you have UCLA who just doesn't lose ever. So that's a big piece of this. But we've got Purdue over Illinois. We've got Iowa won their series. Chris picked Michigan, got the upset over Oregon.
And I knew where they were playing.
Yeah, that was my. I was really careful this week to make sure I got it. I checked three different places to make
Nice.
sure I got the locations correct this week. Chris did not get Michigan State getting beat by Northwestern, unfortunately.
Carl, they won Friday night. They're up 5-0 on Saturday. I thought I had another one. I really did. And they just tell me if you heard this before. They were about five halfway through the game, and the other team slowly creeped their way back and won.
Yeah.
It happens.
Ohio State not only won but swept Maryland. That was the one that stung Cass. We all picked the ranked Nebraska, and we all picked UCLA, even though that was actually a tight series game by game, even though UCLA swept it. But now we're trying to figure out will UCLA break the record for consecutive wins. They've got quite a few left to go to do that, but they've also got a schedule that you're looking at it and like, I don't know that there's any losses in that schedule. It'll be interesting to see. Okay, so this week, since there was some concerns last week, I'm gonna go ahead and go with I'm gonna give my pick as I introduce the series. So we've got rivalry series, Michigan at Michigan State. I'm gonna take Michigan. Iowa at USC. I'm taking USC. Purdue at Northwestern. I'm sorry, I'm going to ride with the Boilermakers again. They've been doing well for me this year. So, Penn State at Ohio State. Since they've been rolling, I'm going to stick with Ohio State. UCLA at Rutgers. I mean, it would be a bold pick to say Rutgers is going to win a game in that series. I'm definitely picking UCLA to win the series. Washington at Minnesota. That's a tight one. I'm gonna go with the road team though. I'm gonna go with Washington. Another really good one. I think this is the series in the Big Ten this week is Nebraska at Oregon. I think that's gonna be tight, but I'm gonna stick with the home team and go with Oregon in that one. Cass, what do you got?
Well, I've got almost the same as you. I'm going with USC, Michigan. I'm giving Oregon the lean because they're home, but that's a tough one. I think that's going to be a really good series. Going Ohio State. I'm also giving the lean to Purdue, even away from home. They've been strong this year. Going UCLA over Rutgers, even though they do have to go all the way across the country. And I am going to go with Minnesota against Washington. I think this is the first time this might be the first time I've actively picked against one of the West Coast teams this season, not counting when they play each other.
Yeah, I mean, seeing them, I kind of think Minnesota's better, but they just haven't been able to win games. That's
And
the
they're
part
not
that's,
consistent. Yeah.
yeah, I.
Neither one of them are all that
This is the thing. I
consistent.
think Minnesota's going to lose this series, and I think they're going to be the team that breaks UCLA's win streak.
That would be hilarious.
They're not going to win that series, but they're going to break the win streak. I think that I'm going to put that on record right now. It's going to be Minnesota that breaks the win streak.
That would be fantastic.
Chris, what do you got?
To stay on that series, I took Minnesota too. I think the home field advantage. I mean, we've been out there. They're back to their real park, right? They're out of the football
Yes,
field.
they are.
So I'm going to go with Minnesota. Home field advantage. Washington, I don't know, man. They didn't look too great. They're better than us. Hats off to them. But, I'll go Minnesota. UCLA, obviously. I did take Northwestern. They impressed me. They came back on Sparty in March. So, if you can do that, well, I guess technically it was probably April by then. But, the way I was making my picks was I had to take Sparty because of the tournament. Northwestern, they fought back. So I took Ohio State again. I'm going Nebraska. I don't know, man. Nebraska might not be as good as people think, but I think they're like one of the best teams because they always kill us. So I think I look at Nebraska with like a different lens just because we just have such a hard time beating them. I think maybe that Schwarber team made a deal with the devil or something, but we have not had any luck with them. So maybe I think they're better than they are, but I'm taking them against Oregon. And then I got Michigan and USC after that.
All right, I'll do a quick rundown of the conference standings, which if you go to iubase.com and click on standings, you will see the standings including tiebreakers. The top is UCLA, Nebraska, USC, and Oregon. They hold the top four slots. Purdue is just one game behind that group. The tournament cut line is 12. IU is now just one behind that at 13. With 5 and 10, with 5 wins, 10 losses, they are only over Michigan State by record versus common opponents. Minnesota, Penn State, and Maryland are all behind IU at the moment. So with IU going to Maryland, that is important because Maryland obviously is looking to climb out of that. I have also added something else to the app's IU base site. which is my old CRPI calculation, now automated on the app. So if you click on that, it actually takes a minute because it calculates it each time, and I haven't optimized the algorithm yet, but it works. So if you click on it, just wait for a minute. It'll pop up eventually. It's pretty interesting though. Now part of it is with either 12 or 15 games, if there's something really odd about your schedule, like in Michigan's case, the fact that they've played so many good teams, Michigan's opponent win percentage is 821, which has Michigan, I mean, hey, they're playing 417 baseball against that schedule. They're actually two in the CRPI right now. And probably reality is somewhere in between. They're not as bad as 417, but they're probably not the number two team in the conference either. But I think it's important to note that puts them ahead of USC and Nebraska. It does drop Purdue from 5th to 11th, because their opponent win percentage is under 400. So Purdue has been benefiting a bit from a weaker schedule, but they've been taking care of business too. So that's a piece of it. IU is at 15th. It's actually a little less because IU's played a little bit more at home, and particularly playing against Minnesota, who's only 250. That's that the schedule's not been easy for IU, but it also hasn't been. There's been some easy series of Washington, Minnesota, and Rutgers have contributed to keeping that number pretty low. So I also kind of just tried to do a couple different exercises to try to figure out what do we think IU needs to do to get into a 12 seed to get into the Big Ten tournament. Right now, IU is at 333. There are four teams tied at 417, which is 9 through 12. So that whole group would be in right now. So if we extrapolate that to the end of the season, IU would need 13 wins to get into the tournament, which is 8 more. So they would have to go 8 and 7 down the stretch to get that. And it's possible, especially given how much the top is just running through the league right now, it's possible 12 wins might be enough, and that's 7 and 8. But if we look at 8 and 7 with what IU has in front of them, that means out of 5 series left, win 4 series and you're there. You don't even need to win all 5 series. You just need to win 4 of the last 5 series. Or win 3 series and not get swept in the other two. So, and given who IU has left, they've got number 17 Maryland, the 17th ranked team in the Big Ten by the standings, Maryland left. They've got 11 Iowa, 10 Northwestern, 8 Illinois, and 5 Purdue. And the Purdue one's on the road. So the Purdue series is really the toughest one left. So I think if what we saw this weekend projects out, I think Indiana will make the Big Ten tournament actually pretty easily. But it's all about execution. And if they go and have a really bad series, say this weekend at Maryland, then they may be in a situation in which they have to go beat a good Purdue team in their place, which IU has always struggled with. So that's kind of what we're facing from a conference perspective. I guess I also have a very, very brief preview of Ball State. Ball State this year, not as solid as they have been in the past. They're playing 500 ball right now, although they are doing quite well in the MAC. They're at 10 and 5 currently in the MAC. So they're doing what they typically do, which is really run their conference. They do have a lot of guys that are hitting over that have an OPS north of 800. That's a number I always look for. So they're doing very well offensively. And they've hit a lot of home runs. They've got Braden Huebner, Jacob Gillis, and Max Kalk have all hit 7 home runs on the year. So those guys are slugging. Pitching wise, they've got a lot of guys throwing a lot of innings with decent ERAs. I haven't had a chance to really dig in to see what they do on the midweeks. But it's a relatively deep pitching staff. So this is going to be all these numbers are significantly more impressive than Evansville were. So that's and Evansville was able to handle IU. So that's my word of warning is that Ball State is not going to be a not going to be a slouch. Alumni you might see at the game. David Letterman is an alumni of Ball State. You might see him. I don't know. One alumni you may very well might see is my wife. Is my wife is a Audrey James. She's an alum of Ball State. So, and she's also a native of Kokomo. And we kind of expect to see Connor Lynn. And Connor Lynn went to the same high school as my wife. So, so if Connor Lynn's pitching, my wife might be there. We'll see.
Letterman.
And Letterman,
Yeah. You buried the lead
yeah.
then.
I don't have any say over whether what Letterman shows up, so
I mean, you never know. You could be there. People doubt this. I mean, people like college, they like to represent their team. I've noticed that. He could be there. I got a couple guys that could be at Maryland. Maybe we'll reverse this. We'll reverse this series preview. Notable alumni. I don't know if you guys have ever watched the show Seinfeld, but George Costanza is the character for Larry David, who was the creator of Seinfeld, and then of course went on to make Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he is a Maryland grad, as well as for those of you who in their childhood days watched The Muppets, Jim Henson. So there are two that could be at Bob Turtle Smith Stadium in College Park, Maryland, over the weekend. And then you say, well, when would they be there? Well, Friday at 6, Saturday at 2, and Sunday at 12 noon are when the games are. So that's when you might see Larry David. Now, he's kind of a grumpy guy. So if he's not the friendliest to you, just, move on. But you possibly might make it into a Curb episode over it. The story of you getting him grumpy, he might just make a whole hour episode about it, which is kind of what he does. So, the Maryland Terrapins are 13 and 18 overall. I'm not sure what their Carl RPI is, the CRPI, but their real RPI is 69. But they are dead last in the Big Ten, like Carl mentioned. I got upset for them when you were like, oh, they're ranked 17th. I'm like, don't even try to make it sound like they're good. But they're 17th out of 17. So dead last in the Big Ten, and we want to keep them that way. They're 8-4 at home and 2-10 in the conference. So we're going to try to get that to. What would that be? 2-13 in the conference and 8-7 at home. Because our goal is obviously to sweep these guys whenever we play them. We have a lot of history with Maryland. We were the only 8 seed to ever knock out a number one in the Big Ten tournament when we beat them. Going back into the 2017, 2018, 2019 days, there was a lot of bad blood between the teams. For some reason, Maryland decided that they were America's team, perhaps. I'm not sure why. But they a lot of USA chants, a lot of pointing at us, and you had Cangelosi, Lucas Cangelosi, and Craig Dedalo, and Ryan Feynman, and there was just Luke Miller. These guys all hated Maryland, and the Maryland guys hated them. It was like a really good, like it wasn't one of these fake rivalries. So going back, it grew the hate for IU baseball fan that has been around a little bit, and it just Purdue's number one, of course. So just under Purdue, you've got your Maryland rivalry. They're coming off a sweep at Ohio State getting swept, in case it wasn't clear. They lost 10 to 8, 14 to 12, and 7 nothing. So we want to just add three more L's onto Maryland. So you can spell Maryland with three L's if you want. You just say land, like longer. That's how we're going to do it. Sunday, I mean, one of their big wins was a Sunday game home for Purdue and a Saturday game home against USC. They actually beat USC. So those are the two big wins. So they do sometimes sneak one out, but we want to sweep them. Notable bat, Braden Martin, hitting 383. He's a utility infielder. He leads the team in doubles, and he's 12 to 12 steals. So he can run. We're going to have to throw him out. And if he hits a ball in the gap, he could fly. So that's Braden Martin. And their big hitter, he is a transfer from LSU, Ryan Costello. He's a redshirt freshman. He leads the team with 74 total bases, 13 home runs, 5 doubles. He is only hitting 261, but obviously, power is his thing. So we want to make sure we can keep him in the ballpark. Something about Maryland, Carl mentioned also about Ball State, well, not David Letterman, but the fact that Maryland does hit a lot of home runs. They have 13, did I get this right? Yeah, 13 guys have homered on the team, and 5 of them have more than 4 home runs. So it does get spread out through the lineup. They're not winning that many games, but they're scoring runs. As far as their pitching staff, they've threw some stuff at the wall, if you know what I mean. A lot of different starters when I went through it. Their last three that they went with, Evan Smith was their Friday guy. 0-3, 7 ERA, though. Lance Williams, he's 1-3 with an 8 ERA. And the Sunday guy, I got a feeling he's not going to be the Sunday guy, but maybe. They might roll him out again. He's 0-1 with a 12 ERA. And he gave up 5 runs on Sunday and got 4 outs. So they might try a different Sunday guy. But it was Austin Weiss. So it was Smith, Williams, and Weiss for their pitching staff. They do have one really good reliever, it looks like, though. Logan Hastings. He's got a 3.7 ERA, 28 innings. He has 2 wins, 3 saves. And in those 28 innings, he has 36 strikeouts. So that would be Hastings, Logan Hastings, and a batting average against 192. So, I mean, if he's coming in the game, suddenly Maryland's a little better than they are when he's not, obviously. So we want to keep an eye on that. We talked about the rivalry. This is games that you have to win, because we talked last week, we don't want the streak to end of us not making the Big Ten tournament. Like, this is something that's, I think we're the only team that has this from when this started, and I kind of like it, and we want to keep it that way. But again, going back, there is definitely some bad blood between the two teams. Yeah, different coaches might have been involved then. Chris Lamonis and was it Rob? Carl, you know his last name.
Bond.
Rob Vaughn. I knew he'd know it. Yeah, definitely some bad blood. But, we'll see how this weekend goes. But if you're in town, head over to College Park. Keep an eye out for Larry David.
All right, well, we had IU has a very, very young position player group. Routinely rolls out an entire starting lineup of freshman and sophomore. Tuesday at Evansville was frustrating. Saturday was, disappointing in that the runs didn't come, late while Rutgers was scoring. Friday and Sunday, though, were dominant. So what I want to ask the group is this: is what level of progress do we think we saw in this past week? Cass, you want to start with us?
Well, I was gonna say, hey, like Feeney said, we got wins. That's the first step after coming off of such a long losing streak. First step is start getting those wins again, figure out how to get those wins. The next step is to do it consistently. Not necessarily that you're gonna win every single game you play, but that you're at least splitting the week or getting the 3 out of 4. You're not going on those long losing streaks. And I think that is kind of the difference compared to, because we've had some young teams, particularly in the Mercer era. I don't think we've had a group of position players, the consistent core group. I don't think we've had one just this young without
Yeah.
having any upperclassmen at all. So that's a big difference compared to most years. What I'd like to see down the stretch is, we're going to have some of those frustrating, disappointing losses. But I want to see it be mostly wins, particularly with the remaining schedule.
And for me, I want to see, again, I was not upset by Saturday. Sometimes the other team is going to beat you. Tuesday was a different story. Against that level of competition, against midweek pitching, you got to put up more than 4 runs. The offense has got to be able to score more than 4 runs. On Saturday, you have a 3-inning drought where you don't score. But I know at least 3 times they hammered a ball right at somebody. And it's just, and you know, that's baseball. That's going to happen from time to time. And it just happened to coincide when, Gavin Siebold, lost a tick on his fastball. And it's one of those things. I say it's a tribute to what Gavin Siebold has done this year, in that for the most part, that hasn't happened. Because if he's just a little off, he gets very hittable. And we saw that a ton last year. And the fact that for the most part he's avoided that this year is a tribute to the kind of work he's put in to keep his fastball velocity up, to be able to use the cutter more as a swing and miss pitch off the plate. Those adjustments that he's made have been remarkable. And he was absolutely dominant that first inning. He that first the first three batters he faced. It was just he was a little bit too hittable after that, and it happens. You have Ivan Mostalski. It's a freshman that is constantly being thrown into the fire. Every freshman's going to have a game that just goes like that, and they're all going to have to go through it at some point. So I have no worries about Ivan Mostalski at all. Again, he got hit. It happens. And then you look at in the modern era of college baseball, typically the teams that are driven by their hitting are much older. You don't see this very often. And in fact, when UCLA did it 2 years ago, they didn't get to 20 wins. And that same group is all juniors now. And they're absolutely dominating all of Division One. So, do I think that means that that's what this Indiana team is going to be? I don't think we have a Rock Chalowski on this team, but you've got some pretty decent talent. We're starting to see the pop finally come, and they've got a huge opportunity for that this weekend because, to Chris's point, Maryland hits a lot of home runs. Well, I think, some of us in this podcast could probably hit a home run out of that stadium. So, yes, I'm exaggerating, but it's a very hitter friendly park. IU has hit 9 home runs in that stadium in one game before. I'd like to see something like that happen this weekend. That would be kind of nice. You want to see them continue to develop. I think another piece of that is Cass mentioned consistency. I think a lot of that comes from what I want to see defensively. Particularly, you had Will Moore really struggled at the plate on Saturday, and that seemed to bleed over into his defense. And then just the opposite, he did really well on Sunday, both sides of the plate. So, we know he's capable, but again, we're talking about a sophomore that's out there, and I'm not. I know I'm mentioning Will Moore. It's not just him. We've seen it through most of the team have those issues, but we've also seen highlights. We finally had an infielder win a red belt, which is good. We hadn't had that yet this year, so we got Jake Hanley representing the infield. Jake is emerging more as the guy we saw at the end of last season. That is huge to see. Owen Tanuver got, didn't have a fantastic weekend after that really hot start. But he's still getting hits and he's still making an impact. And it's just and Braden Ricketts has done phenomenal. And he got beat up on Saturday. He didn't just play catcher. He was getting beat up. He was getting balls hit back at him constantly. And he held in there the whole weekend and then just tore it up at the plate on Sunday. So that's someone I'm really looking at to. It's huge the fact that he can carry so much of the load defensively. We love what TJ Skyler's doing. He just hasn't been able to bring it offensively. And right now, this offense can't afford to have somebody who's not a threat there.
And I do also want to throw in that at least from a couple states over, it did sound like the dugout was back to having fun and was loud and was I don't want to say I don't want goofy to come across in a negative way. To me, part of the joy of college baseball is some of the goofiness, some of the superstitions, and some of the weird stuff. And at least listening to Austin Render, it sounded like that dugout was getting a little bit back to that. And I do love to hear that.
Yes, and I can say that was definitely the case. So, David, do you have anything else to chime in for us today?
No, other than just kind of echoing what Chris said about going out and supporting the Hoosiers in Maryland. I'd also say get out of the if you're in the area of any of the minor league Hoosiers, get out and see them as well. I know everyone I've ever spoken to loves to see fellow Hoosiers out there and love the support. Definitely does not go unnoticed.
And for those local, remember Devin Taylor is going to be in. Gee, I think it's starting. Is it starting tomorrow or tonight? I forgot which. It's a six-game
Yeah,
series.
Mondays are off, so they'll be Langston will be in Fort Wayne Tuesday through Sunday.
So, and I actually caught a game at that ballpark last summer. It's a really nice place to watch a baseball game. So, if you happen to be in that part of the state, which is, roughly there at the at right center field on at the BART, if you need to check. Then definitely get a chance to get out and see Devin Taylor swing a bat. That would be awesome. All right. So thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, David Welch, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. Again, thank you so much, David, for coming on and sharing your knowledge of Hoosiers in the pros. We will see you at the BART.